Project Access for All, the podcast. Interviews and stories about issues, organizations, and people working to create access and inclusion for people with disabilities. Everyone should be welcome everywhere. Here's Project Access host, Alvaro Gutierrez.
Hello and welcome to Project Access for All. Today we have with us Roger DeRose. He's the president and CEO of the Kessler Foundation. Thank you so much, Roger, for being with us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me as well as representing Kessler Foundation, Alvaro.
My pleasure. And the first question that comes to mind is, what can you tell us about the history of the Kessler Foundation?
Well, Kessler Foundation started as a result of Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation, which is a world-renowned hospital that focuses on neuromuscular conditions. And Kessler Foundation started as a fundraising organization by grassroots auxiliary movements, and it started about 28 years ago, and it's continued to expand. And during that 28-year history, it also then became the owner of the assets of the hospital, and we did a hospital conversion in 2004. And through that conversion, in terms of selling the hospital, we were fortunate to build a very large endowment, which funds our programs today, the mission of the organization, which is really to improve the lives of people with disabilities caused by stroke and multiple sclerosis and injuries to the brain and the spinal cord. So we have a two-part mission. One part is research, which is really focused on improving the functionality of the conditions I just mentioned and helping people regain to the best of their ability their independence so that they can move back into their community, family, and society. And then the second part of our mission is to address the very stubborn and high unemployment rate that people with disabilities face every day of their life. And we focus on creating innovative employment programs that demonstrate to American businesses, whether they're large or small, that people with disabilities can add shareholder value to any organization. So we're very proud of our mission, and we live it every day here with the 110 employees that we have in our foundation.
Roger, let me go for a follow-up on that, employment opportunities and employment practices. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Like, what kind of programs are you doing with businesses, or what kind of best practices do you recommend businesses?
Well, it's a very important question that you just asked, and because, you know, of the 55 million Americans that that we have that are considered in the class of disability, between the ages of 18 and 65, there's about 30 million individuals that are that would be considered in the workforce population. And of that 30 million, only 25 to 30% of them are working. So that means that the balance are really living off of their public benefits. And if you live off of public benefits, I think anybody listening to this program knows that, you know, you're not going to create a great asset base or financial base to live throughout the remaining parts of, remaining portion of your life. And so what we wanted to do is demonstrate that in addition to public benefits or separate from public benefits, that people with disabilities can lead a very independent life. They can be great contributors to any workforce. They can work side by side with able-bodied individuals for the same pay, be held accountable for the same metrics and performance measurements, and be real contributors to any organization. And so we've been funding demonstration projects or test market projects that we believe in For example, in large companies like Lowe's, home improvement centers, like Office Max, Office Depot, like Pepsi, where we are helping to fund other nonprofit organizations that bring specific consulting skills to those corporations that are interested in hiring people with disabilities, training their workforces so that they know what to expect in working with people with disabilities, and how to onboard, bring people with disabilities into those work environments so that they can establish and be successful in that organization. And because of that, we have seen great success stories occur in the types of organizations that I've just mentioned. But it doesn't end there. We've done also a very innovative project in entrepreneurism programs, teaching individuals with disabilities that have great ideas for their own businesses, how to become successful in starting a business and sustaining a business. We've created small social enterprise businesses where we have funded other nonprofits that needed the capital injection of funds to purchase equipment, build the right staff, and build the right processes and systems. So we've covered a wide range of innovation that have demonstrated, we believe, over the last 10 years and the last $30 million that we've invested in these programs, that, again, we can help in terms of demonstrating that people with disabilities can bring positive change and make those organizations stronger, more successful in terms of what they are trying to achieve in the marketplace.
That is wonderful for our listeners to learn about, and we'll talk about the website in depth a little bit more later. But speaking about the website, I have to applaud, Roger, the effort of your foundation in making it accessible for everybody. For our listeners, I am legally blind. I use a screen reader for PCs called Zoom Text, which is great, but it depends on the accessibility of the website. And your website is totally accessible for me. And I want you to talk about why it's important to make a website accessible for all.
Well, that's a very good question as well. And when we redesigned our website about 5 years ago, we felt that if we are in the disability community as a leading organization that's trying to change the lives of people with disability, that we had to make it accessible for everyone. And so we felt it very important that anybody coming to our website had access to the information. And so as we look to the future, we're just about ready to relaunch an updated version of our website in the next few months here. I believe it's middle of May. We'll continue to not only make it accessible, but also make it easily accessible in terms of all of the information that we have on there, so that anybody that comes to our site has full access to the data, the information, the social feeds that we have, videos that we have that we are trying to share some of the success stories by doing storytelling of our employment programs, of our research programs. It's a very, very important point that you raised, and I hope that anybody listening to this will understand that if their website is not accessible, that they're missing a very, very important market segment, because with 55 million Americans that have disabilities, and many individuals are in the workforce that have those disabilities, they should be looking at making their websites accessible.
I totally agree with you, Roger, and I know our listeners do too, and that is super important, web accessibility, and also mobile phones, tablets, and everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Now, talking about projects that you are funding at this time, can you give us specifics of projects that you are funding?
Well, we fund two parts to our organization, as I mentioned. One part is that we fund out of the investment income that comes from our our endowment is our research. And so about 75 employees from the 110 employees that we have are dedicated to research in spinal cord injury, brain injury, stroke, and multiple sclerosis. And so we fund about 50% of their research. We ask our researchers that are world leaders, world scientists, that can compete on the world stage for the best research in the world, to compete at the federal, state level, and other private foundations, where they can actually take their science and compete against other world leaders that are doing similar science, and also win grants, federal grants, state grants, private grants. And so about 50% of their funding comes from our endowment. The other 50% comes from our scientists being able to win grants from the National Institutes of Health, the Department of Defense, the Veterans Administration, private foundations, the National Multiple Sclerosis Foundation. So our scientists have been very, very successful in terms of demonstrating their leadership, their thought leadership in the areas that we are focused on in terms of improving new interventions that are going to help people with those conditions think, learn, remember, regain their mobility, or have improvements to the functional issues, the secondary complications that they have to live with every day. The other part of our mission in terms of employment grants, we are funding employment initiatives as well as community integration initiatives for people with disabilities. Our employment initiatives that we fund, for example, some of the large corporate initiatives that I mentioned to you about Pepsi and Lowe's and Office Max, Office Depot, are at the corporate level, but we've also fund those corporations through other nonprofits that act as the deliverer of the service that is being provided to help those for-profit organizations like Lowe's and Office Max, Office Depot, and Pepsi hire people with disabilities and onboard those people with disabilities in terms of finding the right people, helping to set up the right training programs, and then helping to track them and integrate them with able-bodied individuals in those workforces. But we've also funded community integration programs in sports, in the arts, because we believe those are in music, in abstract art, and we believe those have been important because, again, it's another step forward in helping people with disabilities take a step in terms of feeling a part of society, and then from there, building confidence so that they can build skill sets and perhaps enter into areas that they have a passion about in terms of potentially creating employment opportunities for themselves.
Now, two questions in one, Roger. Are you ready for that?
I'll try.
Okay. So, biggest improvement for people with disabilities until today, and the biggest obstacle remaining?
That's a tough question, you know, but let me start by saying this, Alvaro. I believe that the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act in 1990, led by President Bush, number one, and the congressional support that he got that was bipartisan, was a major step forward in terms of demonstrating to the world and to Americans with disabilities that we could take steps forward. You know, when you look at the improvements to the physical infrastructure that has taken place in those 25 years, as we now come up to celebrating on July 26th, the 25th anniversary of the signing of the ADA Act, and you look at the integration of how we've integrated individuals with disabilities into our education system and shrunk the gap in terms of able-bodied individuals and people with disabilities in terms of their educational progress. And you look at healthcare areas, even though we still have to make improvements in health, Those are real advances, public transportation advances that have taken place. We've made real advances, and we're a model for the world to look at in terms of what we've done here in the United States through the ADA Act and other initiatives that have been improvements during those 25 years. I think the one area, however, that we still have a huge gap is employment. And it's one of the reasons why we've invested over $30 million in programs that help integrate people with disabilities back into the community and employment. We still, as I mentioned earlier, only have about 25 to 30% of people with disabilities that of the working age population that are actually working. The others are relying on public benefits to support themselves. And we really believe that as baby boomers start to retire, and we've already started to see that, and we start to see a great shortage of talent in the workforce, that people with disabilities can add value to any organization. And you don't do this from a social justice point of view. You don't do it because you feel that this is a nice thing to do. You do it because you hire people with disabilities because it can add value to shareholders. It can help an organization create better products, better services for the general marketplace that they serve. It can help those companies increase their market share and their improve not only their top-line revenue, but their bottom-line profitability in terms of efficiencies and increased profits because of increased revenues. And demonstrates that we can work, as I mentioned, we can have people with disabilities and able-bodied individuals working side by side. It makes our organizations, it makes organizations, people in organizations, it makes them better managers, it makes them better parents because they can bring those skill sets home. It makes them better citizens of the world. It makes them better individuals all overall. And so I think we're going to see an increase in the hiring of people with disabilities in this next 5 to 10 years that will put us on the right track. We put out a report every Jobs Friday called NTIDE, which stands for National Trends in Disability Employment. And over the last 4 months, we've seen a small increase in tenths of percentage points, but it's nonetheless, it's an increase in the hiring of people with disabilities into organizations. And that's a good sign, and we hope that that will continue.
Roger, you're giving a great positive perspective for people with disabilities about employment. And let's go a little bit more into that, because many of our listeners are looking for a job. They have their resumes ready to go, but they are not so excited to try and go into the workplace to ask for a job. They think, oh my God, are they going to hire me? Are they going to believe in me? Should I say that I have a disability? Shouldn't I say it? What would you say to them, Roger?
Well, you know, it's a complicated question. I realize that. But I think, you know, if we can start young people that have disabilities, if we can help them in the transition, build their skill sets at a very early age, build their confidence and motivation at a very early age, convince their parents that their child is capable of entering the workforce, because oftentimes parents are sometimes the individuals that hold their children back by saying, you know, you don't want to go into the workforce and earn too much money because you'll lose your public benefits. If we can get through that transitional stage and build confidence in young people, I think that is the same way we have seen great improvements over the last 25 years with the signing of the ADA Act. I think over time, it may take a generation, but over time, we will see great improvements in terms of individuals that have been born or have encountered a disability at a young age, build confidence and make that transition. However, I would also say that for anyone that has a disability, that it's very important to be bold and be brave and find ways to demonstrate to any potential employer, even if you have to volunteer for a period of time to get your foot in the door, even if it's for a few hours a week, that could potentially lead to an opportunity in that organization. So that while you're volunteering, even if it's a few hours a week, you're building a skill set that you can then take with you to that company that you're in or that organization that you're in that will potentially see the great performance that you're providing and the great value that you're providing, so that they will then consider hiring you as an opening comes up, or that you can take those skill sets with you to other organizations. It almost becomes it's very entrepreneurial, I understand, but it's almost like a mentorship program. It's almost like a program where you're building your skill sets, even if you have to find a way to volunteer your time and you're not getting paid for it, that you build your skills, you become part of that organization, you're working side by side with other individuals where they can actually see a demonstrated ability that you're bringing. And so it becomes a celebration of the ability of the individual and what that person can bring to the organization. That's what I would do. I have those types of internships, whether they're paid or unpaid, bring great skill sets that you can put in your bag of experience and take with you anywhere. And that's for, I recommend that for an able-bodied individual or an individual that has a disability. It doesn't matter. Those are building skills that are going to help you through life. And that's what I would recommend.
Roger, everybody who is listening to the interview right now says he is the president and CEO of the Kessler Foundation, and we feel the excitement and the passion and the commitment that you have for the foundation and for your work. Can you tell our listeners what is the most rewarding part of what you do?
Yeah, for me, having grown up in the for-profit world and industry, for about 30 years and then converting over to the nonprofit world as I entered the final years of my work career, it really has been very rewarding, Amaro, particularly from the perspective of when you come home at night to recognize that the work that you've done, the hours that you've put in, the investment of time that you're putting in is really making a difference in the lives of people with disabilities, that you're really doing something, even if it's micro steps, that you're really doing something that is helping to change the lives, improving the lives of people with disabilities, whether that's on the research side where we're coming up with new interventions that can be used to help stroke patients or spinal cord injury patients, brain injury patients, multiple sclerosis patients, help them address issues of mobility or help them address issues of fatigue or help them address issues of thinking and learning and remembering. If we can help make positive change from a research perspective leading to clinical care improvements, that's a great benefit that I think we all step back and say, I feel good about the work I've been doing. I feel the same strong passion about the employment initiatives and the community integration initiatives that we're doing for people with disabilities, because it helps them build confidence that they can reenter the community after they've gone through the medical aspects that they've had to deal with. And sometimes those medical aspects are for life, but at the same time that we've helped transition them back to the community, to the family, to society, to the workplace. And I think all of our employees feel that way. The 110 employees that we have here who feel a very strong passion about our mission, and they've said that by helping our organization be recognized as one of the 100 best organizations to work for in New Jersey for the past 4 years, and for the past 3 years, consecutive years, helped us be recognized as one of the 50 best nonprofits to work for. And when you consider that there's 1.5 million nonprofits in the United States and our employees are rating us that highly, I think it always goes back to mission. It doesn't come down to just a paycheck and benefits and vacation time. It really comes down to having a connection back to the mission of the organization. And I think our employees feel that strong connection.
If I could say something to that or add something to that, would be for our listeners, it's always important, as Roger is telling us today, to love what you do and do what you love, and that's what he's proving us without a doubt in this interview. Roger, how can people donate to your foundation?
Well, I mean, we would love to have any of your listeners that are listening to this interview feel free to go to our website, which is KesslerFoundation.org. That's KesslerFoundation.org. And there's a donate page, a donate button right on the page, and they can feel free to donate $1 or $5 or $1,000, whatever they feel a passion to the mission that we have to our organization. We would welcome that. It's very, very kind that you would offer that opportunity, Alvaro.
My pleasure. And Roger, the microphone is yours to tell our listeners your final thoughts on the important work that you are doing in the foundation and what you want our listeners to walk away from this.
Well, thank you. And Alvaro, thank you for hosting this this interview and giving us this opportunity. And I would say to your listeners that, you know, I don't want to this to sound self-promotional in terms of what our organization is doing, because there are so many organizations, so many great organizations in the disability community that are trying to advance all of the initiatives that we are trying to do as well. We can't do it on our own. There are many organizations, thousands of them across the United States that are doing this, and others around the world that are doing it as well. But I think it's probably appropriate to say to your listeners that as we celebrate the 25th anniversary of the signing of the Americans Disabilities Act, that we should all be proud of what has been accomplished during that time. There's still much to be done. This was a great civil rights movement. It was a great social justice movement. But it's in our hands to take the initiative, to be brave, to be bold, to be forthright in terms of what we feel the 55 million Americans that have disabilities can offer to society, to our families, to our communities, to the workforce, and that we should continue to try to make improvements, continually improve upon what's already been achieved by historians in this last 25 years, and that we should all feel good about that, but that there's always positive change that can continue, and that's what we should all be working towards. And so I ask all of your listeners to celebrate with all of us as we celebrate the 25th anniversary on July 26th, but look for ways that we can continually improve for this large majority-minority group of 55 million Americans that have a disability but want to demonstrate the important abilities that they bring to the world marketplace.
Finally, Roger, tell us again the website so people can go.
Our website is KesslerFoundation.org. That's KesslerFoundation.org. And if they Google that, our website will pop right up.
Well, Roger, I really appreciate your time, and I know Elaine and everybody at the Kessler Foundation also deserves credit for helping us making this happen. We know how busy you are as the president and CEO of such a big and important foundation. So thank you for your time and your passion that you bring to the table.
It's my pleasure, Elvira. Thank you very much for focusing on the entire disability community and in part the work that we're doing. We feel very proud about the work we do and the opportunity that we have to share with your listeners. Thank you again.
For our listeners, remember that we are on social media. You just go to Facebook, look for Project Access for All, and you can like us there. You can follow us on Twitter by going to Twitter at Project Access for All. You can visit our website at www.projecttaxesforall.org. And if you want to be on the show, you can email us to podcast@projecttaxesforall.org. So from Alvaro, from ABS and Project Taxes for All, thank you so much for listening to this very important and powerful interview, and have a wonderful day.
Project Access for All, the podcast, is a production of Art Beyond Sight in New York. For more about Art Beyond Sight and Project Access, visit this website, projectaccessforall.org. And you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and find Project Access on iTunes. Project Access. Everyone should be welcome, everywhere.